All right, welcome to the Muslim Voices in Texas Oral History Project. This is Melon Buriwala interviewing Husseina Yusuf for this collection on March 2nd, 2021. Husseina, how are you today?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, good. And would you kind of want to introduce yourself a little bit and kind of tell the kick things off by telling me who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Husseina Yusuf. I'm 25 years old. I was originally born in California, lived there till I was like 7 or 8. I remember moving here in Houston now when I was in second grade. Mm-hmm. I went to the University of Texas at Austin, and I currently live in Houston. I live with my parents now, and my parents are originally from Pakistan, Karachi.
Cool.
My parents are both college educated. My dad has his master's degree, I think his MBA, and my mom has a bachelor's degree. I think she did a bachelor's degree in Karachi, like in Pakistan, and then she did another one in or something like that here. Yeah, so just like, I don't know, education level of my parents, I feel like, so you can gauge, I don't know, just my background and stuff. And I am currently working at a company called Alight Solutions, which is in so it's sort of software consulting, that's what you can call it. And yeah, so I'm currently living at home. And then a little bit about like my, I guess, religious or like background. So I'm part of a very small sect of Shia. So it's a sect within Shia called Bori. And I grew up with that. My parents are that sect. And yeah, I think that probably had a lot of impact on the way that I grew up, and that's how me and you met.
Definitely.
Our parents are friends. So yeah, that's like a little bit about everything, I guess.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that our parents are friends, because I was supposed to mention at the beginning that I do know you personally, which I think only makes these interviews more fun, because you know, we don't have to cut through anything. I do want to talk to you about obviously your religious background, and then your family, but first I want to kind of start by talking to you about your experiences with moving to Texas. You know, you moved at a pretty young age. What do you remember about before you moved, or your life in California?
You know, I think my parents were very open, and they were very social, and I wasn't. I think that they were like young, and they were around a lot of liberal influences, I'll be very honest. And I think when they moved here, you know, at first I remember them saying they really didn't like it. And I just really didn't know what to think, because I was so young. And I think eventually through the masjid and stuff, they made friends, and they kind of grew to like it.
Right.
But I do think the masjid really influenced like the surroundings, influenced. And I don't know if it was like, it's such a combination of things, right? I don't know if it was like age, so as they were getting older, they were getting more conservative. Right. But then it's also like what I remember of Houston, like that move was that Houston had this reputation of being a lot more conservative. Then,
so was that something that attracted your parents at the time, or like do you think that was a factor in their decision to move?
No, that definitely wasn't a factor. It was purely because of my dad's job that we had moved here. And actually, that's a good point that you make up. Economically, what had happened was that my dad had asked for a raise or a promotion of some sort at work. And his manager or boss at the time had said something like, I can't give you a raise. I can't give you more money, but what I can do is give you the same pay, but shift you somewhere where standard of living, like price wise, is a lot lower, which California to Houston was that. So his money went a lot further here.
That's interesting. So what did your dad do?
Back then he was working for, this is funny, I don't know if you remember phone cards by any chance. He was working for a phone card company.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so when that ended, that was sort of like on its last leg because phone cards weren't really a thing anymore. That's when he switched jobs. And I just can't remember what he like switched to.
No worries. That is interesting. Do you feel like there was any, like, do you feel like that was a source of tension or pressure for your family at the time? And, you know, your dad was kind of working in a dying industry and, you know, maybe wasn't so sure about the long-term prospects about his job.
You know, I'll be honest, at least me personally, I don't know if these were the conversations that my parents had.
Yeah.
Without me there, but I don't remember ever hearing about it. I think it might, like, I don't remember it being like, oh, I'm in this dying industry. I think it was like when it was almost dying, and my dad, at that was the point that my dad realized, oh shoot, it's dying. And then it was almost like, it was sort of like a mutual thing. Like, I think the company was like, hey, it's dying. I think my dad was like, hey, it's dying. So I just probably exit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. And so, your mom, you know, I thought it was interesting that you said that, you know, she was educated in Pakistan or university educated in Pakistan. And then coming back to the States, what went into her decision to go back to school when she got here?
I think a couple things. So her degree in Pakistan was political science.
Okay.
And I think that there wasn't a lot of scope, like, for work that she was finding to do that in.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think, things that were, like, kid-friendly and stuff like that. You know what I mean? I think she just, like, wasn't finding a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then, so I think she wanted to, like, move into something else. And then the other thing, I think my mom, like, she's always told me this, she really likes to study. Like, she really liked learning. So I think that was also another thing where she was like, let me just, like, learn something new and get another degree. And at the time when she got her degree was when I was, like, 2 or 3 years old. That's when she got her second degree.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, at that point, I think it was, like, tech was very, like, up and coming at that point. You know what I mean?
Right.
So she got it in California at the school called DeVry.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think it was just, she just wanted to do something. She's always been that type. Like, my mom's always been the type to, like, always do something. She doesn't like sitting at home or just, you know.
Right.
Not that that's a bad thing, but just that's just how she was. And so I think she was like, let me go and do something so I can like get a job and you know.
And I think the other element of you know, your mom's decision and in her path is that you know, it's not typical for lack of a better term, Desi housewives to do that kind of thing and to, you know, take initiative and get an education or further their education and work in the States. Do you feel like that, you know, that's had sort of an impact on yourself and, you know, your you know, how you view you know, relationships as a, you know, and religion and, you know, cultural baggage and all of that. Do you feel like, you know, mom sort of taking that different path has changed the way that you view those things?
Yeah, you know, that's like so interesting that you bring all of that up, because even growing up, my mom has always said to me that she is very lucky to, one, she attributes a lot of the things that she's been able to accomplish to like my dad, because she said that she's very lucky to have had a husband who has supported her and even encouraged her to like go out and do these things and like embrace these opportunities. Because it's one thing for like a Desi woman to be like, to come to her husband and be like, hey, I want to do these things, can you please like help me or blah 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 blah. It's another thing, I think, and it seems very weird to say that this is progressive compared to our standards now, but for our parents' generation, like this is considered, that is considered progressive to have a husband who not only will be like, yes, I'll take care of things so that you can do this, but like at moments when my mom used to doubt herself or used to be like, you know, maybe I shouldn't or I can't do this, for my dad to be like, no, like I want you to pursue an education, I want you to pursue this job, because in the like fast forwarding to Houston, around like 2008, my mom got a job at an accounting firm.
Mm-hmm.
And she started off as an admin. They're just almost doing like secretary work, and then slowly started to move into tax accounting. Mm-hmm. And they would send her to these courses so that she could start, you know, getting more into tax. And my dad was the one that really encouraged her to be like, no, like you should do these classes, you should move into this. And then she would have like a busy season that would be like very intense busy seasons during her tax season, where she would be like literally up like 5, 6 a.m. Wow. and like sleep at like midnight kind of thing. And like mm-hmm. it was like very hard for her, but my dad really encouraged her to like stick with it and continue. So she's always attributed a lot of her success to my dad and him like supporting her. Mm-hmm. And then I think for myself, like if I'm like truly analyzing it, I think really and truly my dad has never been the one to like say, oh, Hosanna, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this. Like I think he'll make certain like comments sometimes, but in terms of actually supporting things that I wanted to do, he was never like, oh, you shouldn't do that. Like, as an example, I know a lot of, and this is like very anecdotal.
Right.
So I can't like speak to like numbers or percentages, but I personally knew a lot of parents and dads who would tell their daughters not to go to college in faraway cities or like cities where they weren't living at home or things like that, because they just like didn't think it was right for a girl who was unmarried or whatever to like live outside of home.
Right.
And like pursue, even if it was for education or whatever. But like that was never the case with my dad. Like when I got into UT, it was never a question of like, oh, but maybe, you know, you should go to U of H or, you know, some other school that's closer so you can be closer to home. Like I think my dad recognized that like UT is such a great opportunity, and I'm not going to hold her back from doing that just so she can be closer to home. You know what I mean?
Wow. Yeah.
And like even with like me working, I don't think there was ever a point where my dad was like, you don't need to work so hard, like just, you know, just have, you know, just wait till you're married or whatever, whatever. Like I don't think he would ever say that.
Right.
Like I don't remember him ever saying those things to me. You know, but there are other ways, obviously, that like my dad, you know, still held on to his very traditional beliefs. But I think that's one thing. And that's a big thing in Boris, I've actually noticed, is that they do. There's obviously a lot of things we can talk about with Boris, but one thing I do appreciate is that they do emphasize education, not just for their males, but also for their women.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah. So I want to ask one more question about this. So you talked about how it affected you. You know, you talked about sort of the dynamics between your dad and your mom when it came to her career. But I'm interested in how you feel like it affected your family dynamic as a whole. You know, traditionally, the women in Desi households or Bori households are around to be, you know, are to be, you know, doing all the housework and provide a very constant presence in the household. You know, it seems like your family was set up a different way. Do you feel like that had any effect on your dynamic as a family?
So, you know, I'll be honest. This is, I think, one of the ways where my dad still did hold on to his very, like, traditional beliefs. I don't think he was the type of person to completely take on the household work so my mom could like completely focus on her work and her, you know, I think there was still an expectation that my mom was going to like come home and make dinner. And you know, the other very interesting thing that I do want to point out is that, for lack of a better term, the patriarchy is also very much perpetuated by women, right?
Definitely, definitely.
So it's like, it wasn't even that my dad would be like, Myra, you need to come home and cook the dinner and make sure the house is clean. It was like my mom would be like, Shepherd, don't cook dinner because I'm gonna come home and do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I think my dad still did have this belief, like in his like most ideal world, like he wouldn't have to do any of the dishes or, you know, making any of his own food, but he did do it and he was like happy to do certain things, I think more than some of his other male counterparts. But there was still this level of like, in my ideal world,
like you're not as progressive,
you know what I mean?
Right, right. So sort of the expectation that, you know, perpetuated on both sides, but the expectation that, you know, her career was, you know, totally okay and, you know, and encouraged, but that didn't offset her, you know, alternative responsibility to her household and her family, you know, doing the things that, you know, a mother figure is supposed to do in that setting, right?
Yeah, exactly, 100%.
Great. Yeah, you know, I think it's very interesting that, you know, you bring up, you know, obviously the patriarchy, but also, you know, expectations about domestic chores and tasks and things that are typically, you know, prescribed to women and associated with women. You know, I think you're pointing to, you're poking at a much larger, you know, conversation that we're having in our generation, you know, compared to our parents' generation, you know, about how, you know, marriages work, how modern marriages work, how to balance careers, how to allocate household tasks. So, you know, without sort of jumping the gun too much, obviously, you know, your situation, you are about to enter, you know, a marriage. So I'm just curious about, you know, if it's not too personal, kind of how that conversation has looked like between you and your fiance and how, you know, y'all have sort of had this deliberation about, you know, what your responsibilities look like.
Yeah. Give me 60 seconds.
Sure. Sorry. I know that was a long wind up.
Oh, no, you're good. I really want to like talk about that one in detail. That's why. Okay. I'm but I really want to talk about that one because that's actually something I've been talking to a lot about with my friends and they have talked about how has evolved and how in some ways they can almost be, I don't want to say harder to navigate, but they can be just, there's almost more to navigate.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah. It's not that they're harder to navigate. It's almost just like there's more to navigate.
Right.
my car now. Okay. So me and Safe have talked a lot about this, and the conclusion that we have come to, and that after talking to a lot of friends in like modern marriages and stuff that we've come to, is that essentially the roles were very much linked to gender, and they were very much predetermined for you, right? So it was like a woman is supposed to cook and clean and take care of the kids, and a man is supposed to be the breadwinner. And there was no room for like negotiation with that, right?
Right.
I mean, and maybe you could even say that there was room for negotiation on the man's part, but there was never really any room for negotiation on the woman's part, right? Like, so if you take my like mom as an example, it's like my dad sort of had room for negotiation where he could maybe help out with the house and like do certain things kind of thing. And there were even points where my dad wasn't the breadwinner, but my mom was. But there was never really a point where my mom was never the caretaker of the house, right?
Right.
And I think that speaks to a lot of like our parents' relationships, and arguably even so from what I see with my cousins and stuff in Pakistan, like even our generation, but couples that are in Pakistan, right? Like those roles are very clearly defined.
Right.
The difference between the with modern relationships is that it's entirely up to us to determine what those roles are. Right. So it's like, it is not a question of like, women are expected to do this and men are expected to do this. It's like, well, women are earning now and men are earning now, so all of the other stuff is completely up to the couple to determine who does it. And so like for some modern couples, or I don't even want to say modern, but some like couples of our generation, they still have this dynamic that they've decided for themselves is what they want to do, where the woman still cooks and cleans and does all these things because she wants to do that, or they've determined that those are the roles that they want to keep or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like in my relationship, we've determined that like that's not how we want to do it. So it's very much like we've talked about putting systems in place to where like it is split up. So it's like maybe, and if I'm talking about like my cousin's marriage and things like that, like they've done things where it's like, okay, dinner responsibility alternates every night. And if some nights you can't do it, you just communicate that to the other person.
Right.
If we're talking about like financially, it's like, you know, you pool together your money to pay for rent, and things like that. And it's almost like there's more discussion to be had in marriages and relationships of our generation, because it's like you really need to discuss everything and who those roles are going to be allocated to. What ends up happening, I think, sometimes is that the things that aren't clearly outlined and discussed, you just fall back on what you've seen in your house, which is that the woman takes care of it.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's what ends up happening in like in relationships of our generation, is that things that couples don't clearly talk about with like, you're going to do this and I'm going to do this, it just kind of falls on the woman, which sucks.
You're right.
Yeah. So that's sort of with me and Safe, I have always been like very firm from the beginning that this is like, we are going to be splitting these things, because that was something that I really didn't like seeing grow up, just was like how stressed my mom would get doing all of these things. And I would just see my dad, and yes, arguably like my dad has great like points to him, and that he like, you know, was progressive in the sense that he, you know, really like supported my mom to go after what she wanted and things like that. But from my perspective, that was just something that bothered me, seeing that dynamic in the house. And I really didn't like that. So that was something I was like, one of the first things me and Safe talked about was like, it's not going to be like that with us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that y'all had an explicit conversation about those things, because I think you're absolutely right in that when these topics aren't discussed by couples, and you know, they start to live together, for example, or you know, they start to share some responsibilities, oftentimes like people, men specifically, in same-sex couples will default to sort of gendered norms that they're comfortable with that they might not even be thinking about. But obviously that responsibility is then passed on to the women, you know. And you know, I think that's a really good point. I did want to pivot a little bit, because just respecting our time, I did want to talk a little bit about I want to discuss your religious identity, but I also wanted to talk about your sense of, I guess, Texan identity. Obviously you moved to Texas seven. First, kind of take me through, like, how did it feel all that different from, you know, where you were growing up, and what do you think were the major differences when you made that transition, and you know, maybe some of the things that you had to change?
I'm really trying to think. I'll be so honest. I think because I was so young, I was like 7 or 8, and
right.
I know it's not like crazy young. Like I wasn't like 2 or 3 where like I still didn't have senses, but I was so, I think, naive to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the things that were going around me, I was really in my own little bubble that I really can't speak to like what I noticed as major differences. I think it really wasn't until I got a lot older, like probably in high school and even college, that I started to realize how fundamentally different Texas and California were in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And how different my childhood would have been if I had stayed in California. But I think it was never an active thought in my mind growing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad that you said that, because, you know, you're right. Like, in a lot of ways, like, you know, it's just a difference between being a kid in California and being a kid in Texas.
Yeah. And like, you know, right now, like, we can talk about so many things where like California is so liberal and like, just like different things that you experience that I've experienced in Texas growing up, like racism and just how like Houston as like a Muslim, like the Bori Jamaat here, the Bori Masjid here is like a lot more conservative and things like that. I don't think all of that fully processed, but like that's very location contingent. You know what I mean?
So when did that, you know, when did you start thinking about those things, and really having a sense of like, oh, you know, I live in a place that is a lot more religiously conservative than the place that I, maybe the place that I grew up in? Or do you feel like that was a thought that you ever had where, you know, you kind of came to that realization?
Yeah, I really think a lot of these things didn't hit me until I went to college, and I almost, I think, separated from my parents. I think before then, I'll be very honest, I think I was just like, I would just regurgitate things that I would hear at home. It wasn't like, and so even a lot of things that I said in high school, they're so vastly different than things that I believe and say now. It was just like I would hear things at home that my parents would say and just kind of regurgitate that, because I didn't have the tools being like living with them. I was so influenced, and I don't think I had the like the intellect, not the intellectual capacity, but I just didn't have that motivation to go out and seek my own information. I thought whatever I was consuming at the time was enough. You know what I mean?
Right. And how do you feel about that now? You know, what you were consuming at the time?
Yeah, I wish that I had had that thing to go out and seek more information, because I think that a lot of the beliefs that I held in high school were so wrong and so I don't even have like words. I just, they were so wrong and so misguided and things like that. But I'm very glad, having said that, I'm very glad that I got the opportunity of being away for college for 4 years to really, truly, I think, come into my own and have those experiences where, like, I took a lot of different classes and I learned so many things and I experienced so many different types of people that I do think now I really have that skill to be able to sift through information and not just, like, read something and just almost believe it as fact and think that that's the only information that's there.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah, I mean that's what college is for, right? To enhance critical thinking skills and allow us to do these things. So yeah, I'm really glad that you were able to kind of have that growth. So how does it, does it feel different now? Obviously now you've been in Houston for a little bit of time now, somewhat in the same setting that, maybe enabled you to have thoughts that you don't have anymore. I guess that's a really long way of saying, like, does it feel different now being in those spaces? Like, obviously right now we're in a pandemic, but being at the masjid, for example, or sort of being around other Boris, for example, or, participating in, whatever gathering or, any of that.
Yeah. So when I was younger, I think I lived at home. I didn't have a lot of autonomy. So it was like, if my parents said to go to masjid, I would go to masjid. And my parents almost dictated like who I hung out with, where I hung out with them, all of these things, right?
Right.
And so I think when I was younger, I would like go to masjid and my parents would tell me to pray and they would tell me, that like the way to heaven was these things, and they would say like doing this is good and this is good, and I think I would like internalize that, and I do think it took a while, but when I was around all of that, a lot of my self-worth and understanding of good and bad came from religion. Right? Is that what I was around? Right. And then I think it wasn't until I went to college that I realized that good and bad, self-worth, it doesn't have to be linked to like what religion deems as good and bad. So like as an example, like Muslim people determine that drinking is bad or sex before marriage is bad, and those things are almost, at least in my anecdotal experience, I can't say like fundamentally what Islam preaches, but that it was almost taken as like people that do these things are bad people, right?
Right.
Not that they're just doing something that the religion deems is not good, but it was almost like a self-worth thing. Your self-worth came from being a good Muslim. And I think when I went to college and I wasn't around that so much, I was really able to extrapolate the two things. I was able to separate them and determine that, like, if I drink, that doesn't make me a bad person. And I determined what my own versions of good and bad are. Like, I determined that being a good person means that you care for other people and that you do the right thing and that, you know, you don't steal, you don't lie, you don't cheat, those kinds of things, right? Like, so for me personally, that's what it was. It was more of, I determined that self, like my own self-worth and even the self-worth of other people comes from like more of a moral standpoint rather than what religion deems as good and bad. And I think when I really started coming to those conclusions, that's when I really started to drift away from religion, because I personally didn't like the feeling of feeling like I was a bad person, because I just felt like I was doing things that the religion deems inappropriate, but I felt like I wasn't harming anyone by doing these things. I wasn't, you know, I just, for me, I had determined that that wasn't what I wanted to determine if I was a good or bad person. And so it can still be a struggle sometimes, like being at home and having, like, especially my mom still, excuse me, holds those values of, like, if you're a good Muslim, you're a good person, and if you're a bad Muslim, you're a bad person, and still very much preaches that at home. That can be hard, but I think it is good that I've determined what my own moral compass is.
Good. One other thing I want to discuss while we're on the topic of, you know, religion and values and custom is obviously one of the biggest ways that these things are enforced is our parents, obviously, but I feel, especially in our community, that the next biggest thing is probably the community itself, right? In enforcing certain norms, and, you know, sometimes that means policing certain people, sometimes that means, you know, ostracizing other people, sometimes, you know, it can take a whole lot of forms. But I'm just curious about, like, first, just, you know, maybe what your experience is like with the community, and, you know, maybe either positive or negative. Second, you know, how you feel like that impacts the way that you look at it and the way that you interact in that space.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that. I will say that I am a very big advocate for the community that being Bori allows you to have. I think that there are pros and cons to that community, because I think that because we're such a tight-knit community, like you said, they're allowed to police what you do and almost ostracize you if you don't do things that in the way that you want them to do. However, I will say that it is a very, very nice feeling to have a built-in community wherever I go.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that I'm so pro community is because I have been able to find a community of people that I think have the same beliefs about religion as I do. And what I mean with that is that I think that I have found a community of people who truly believe that it's more about who you are as a person that matters and not who you are as a Muslim that matters. So it's a very non-judgmental community with the choices that you decide to make. And, you know, and I think that as I've gotten older and I'm not so much forced to be part of that community in ways that I don't want to be part of it, I'm able to pick and choose, like, who are my friends? Who do I want to hang out with? What part of the community do I want to associate with? But I have also been able to find these people. And so that's why I'm such a big advocate for it. Having said that, I will say that being part of the community does require some sacrifices in some ways. And I don't even want to say sacrifices. I think it just means that you do have to be aware that, like, if you, you know, publicly do things and, you know, the community finds out about you doing certain things, that they don't deem appropriate, that you will be ostracized. And so I think that that's then your personal decision of whether you want to continue to do these things privately and still be part of the community, or whether you choose to do these things like very publicly. Because I will say, I think I'm like a pretty public person with the choices that I make, but there are, you know, I think that in certain situations I am careful as to what I do publicly, because I know that it will affect whether I can be part of the community or not. And so I think it's that choice, right, that people have to make of, do you want to privately do what you want to do and still be part of the community, or do you want to publicly make that choice and then be ostracized or no longer be part of the community? And there's no judgment, at least on my end, of what choice people make. But for me, I have always found more value in being part of the community than publicly doing things that the religion deems inappropriate. And I, having said all of that, there are a lot of situations that I find so frustrating and that are very, very, very hard to stomach. But it's just that trade-off, and for me, I really value being part of the community. And the other part of it too, second part of it is that I can potentially determine that I no longer want to be part of the community because my religious beliefs or my beliefs in general just don't align with you know, whatever Bori's deem to be Bori. But my decision heavily impacts my parents' ability to be part of the community. And I think that's something that is very hard for first-generation kids, because I can't, at least for myself, like, I can't make that decision for myself, right? Like, the decision that I make is going to impact my parents. And so I have to determine, not only is it worth it for me to publicly do these things and make the decisions that I make and how it's going to impact my ability to be in the community, but also how it's going to impact my parents' ability to stay in the community. And for them, the community is at my parents. At least the community is everything to them. They, you know, coming from Pakistan, where it's like Muslims all around them and everyone looks like them and everyone believes the same things, it is so important for my parents to have a group of people that they can turn to that believe the same things that they do and look the same way that they do. I think that's such a source of comfort for them. And so I just don't want to be the reason that that's taken away from them. So it does impact my life in a lot of ways. And like, for example, I'm engaged now, but like for people like who they're going to marry and, you know, who they can hang out with and what, even potentially like what kind of jobs you can have and things like that. But I just couldn't take that away from them. So I know that it for me, I need to make sure that I'm kind of at least somewhat staying in line.
Yeah. You know, that feels like a lot of responsibility on your shoulders. You know, yeah. You know, be responsible on some level for, you know, your place in the community, but also, you know, in a way your parents as well. I just want to ask you one last question, because I know we are a little bit pressed for time, but rather than opening up an entirely new topic, just carrying on this thread, I'm just curious about how you think, or whether you think, gender sort of plays into this topic of conversation when it comes to sort of responsibility and community and family, and, you know, public versus private. And, you know, that entire discussion, I'm just curious about if you feel at all, and if so, how, you know, gender sort of factors its way into the discussion.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I am very curious how this is going to play out with our generation. I can't really tell you how I've seen it play out in our generation yet, but because I think for us, like, our parents are still the ones who enforce religion and who enforce community and stuff, and that's, and when you talk about gender, it's always females, right? Like, it's always, you always think about your mom is the one that tells you to pray, your mom is always the one that tells you to come to mosque and those kinds of things, and your mom does that at home too with your dad. So I think females are always the one that are expected to enforce the religion and keep that culture going. And I think, I almost think in some ways males have the in their case it's a privilege of choice, right? Where they have the privilege of not being a person to enforce it, so they can just like do what's being told of them and be part of the religion, versus like women have the really difficult task of being the model Muslim in the house, not just for themselves because that makes them like eligible women, but also because they're expected to enforce that for their entire family. And so like the ways that I've seen it is like if a husband isn't as religious, it's like, oh, well, why don't, to the wife, it's always like, well, why don't you enforce it? Why don't you tell him to do this, this, and that? If kids aren't as religious, it's always like, well, why doesn't the mom tell them to do anything? So I do think a majority of that grunt work is placed on women to do that. And I can speak from like at least my parents' example that I do wonder, at least like for our parents, if it's a matter of like they're doing it out of choice, or it's just because it's like the way that they are and the way that they've been told to be good mothers and good wives. You know what I mean? Like I wonder if like the things that I'm talking about, how like, you know, my mom needs to be like a model Muslim or like these sorts of things, are running through my mom's head when she's doing it, or it's just that like growing up, women are just taught to be more religious, and then because my mom is more religious, that she naturally wants everyone, you know what I mean? Wants everyone to be around her to be more religious. I mean, I definitely think that subconsciously there's probably some of what I was saying going on, but I think in my mom's head and for the women in our lives, I don't think it's so much a conscious thought rather than just
like an inborn sense of responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. And just like the ways that they've been taught to be good mothers and good wives.
Yeah. All right. So just being respectful of the time, I know that, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time left for me. And obviously, I very much appreciate you talking to me today. I just wanted to close this interview off by doing something that I like to do with all of my interviewees, which is pretty much the exact same thing that I asked you in the you know, at the beginning. But, you know, with keeping in mind everything that we talked about, I was hoping that you could maybe just reintroduce yourself one last time really sort of define who you are in your terms.
Yeah, I like that. That's a cool way to end an interview.
Thanks.
So my name's Senna. I'm 25 years old. I moved from California when I was around 7 or 8 years old. And I think being a first generation women of color with Desi parents has really caused me to have a much higher sense of responsibility of my actions. So I think that's something that I have to keep in mind every day. And I think the biggest thing that I've been able to do for myself is create my own moral compass rather than relying on a religion or some predetermined moral compass. And so I think that's really what I use to navigate life and to navigate my actions is my own moral compass. I think it's really that balance of applying my moral compass to life while also knowing that my parents' religious moral compass has impacts on my life and their life.
All right. Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on. This has been an interview for the Muslim Voices Oral History Project with the Institute for Diversity and Civic Life. The date is March 2nd, 2021. Signing off.
Okay.